I'm Marcus Smith, and this is Constant Wonder. Christmas is drawing ever closer, and today again we find ourselves on a journey called Advent, a pilgrimage through time toward a special event regarded by so many as holy. For us at Constant Wonder, this season is a welcome opportunity to share with you an audio calendar mirroring all that hopeful anticipation. We're bringing you short episodes every day right through the 25th. Our special guests for this series exhibit a spirit of wonder and awe connected to the feelings of hope, reverence, peace, and goodwill. Say Star of Bethlehem to a gardener like me, and the first thing that springs to mind may well be a flower by that name, also called a grass lily. Although this Star of Bethlehem flower is a member of the asparagus family, you'd never eat it because it's toxic. Besides, it doesn't look a thing like table asparagus. I only mention it because of a little bit of charming folklore behind it. The biblical, rather than botanical, Star of Bethlehem is said in this folklore to have fallen down to earth. This, of course, was after it had served its purpose of guiding the Magi, where it shattered against the ground into countless tiny pieces that then turned miraculously into these simple white flowers, each with a single stem surrounded by grassy blades like a crocus. If the Bible story of a miracle in the heavens over Bethlehem weren't enough for us to puzzle over, then folklore like this can heighten the star's impact, shall we say. Just think of these flowers, offspring of the original star. You could think of them as organic, holy relics spread across the world and shining at our feet. Now, the actual, original Star of Bethlehem, the one up in the sky that we think of when we decorate a Christmas tree or read from Luke chapter 2, well, that star has been the object of much speculation. Did a new star actually appear that night long ago above a tiny village in Judea? We thought we'd pose the question to Deborah Harsma, who for over 12 years served as the president of BioLogos. That's an organization dedicated to a premise of compatibility between religious belief and scientific understanding. Harsma's background is specifically in astrophysics, and she's a frequent speaker on topics related to science and Christian thinking. I put to her the question of whether it's possible that the Star of Bethlehem was actually not a star at all.
This is a favorite topic of speculation for Christians, astronomers in the Western world going back hundreds of years. And the thing is, we can calculate all the more easily now with computers exactly what the heavens did look like in those years around the time Jesus was born. And so we can look to see, were there special stars in the sky?
Apparently, there are any number of speculative possibilities.
It could be just a bright star. It could be a comet. It could be a planet. So our planets look to the eye like stars, but tend to be brighter, and they move around the sky. So the ancients called them the wandering stars. So they don't stay in front of the same constellation all the time. They move. It could be a supernova explosion, a star that explodes and is incredibly bright for a short period of time. All of these have been put forth as possible theories. And I want to emphasize, it could also just be a miracle. We have, right at the same time, we have the angel chorus appearing in the heavens to the shepherds, and that was clearly supernatural. We have Paul on the road to Damascus, and he has that blinding light in his eyes. God can do these great lights in the sky. Then people kind of play that out, like, okay, if it was a really bright light in the sky, it seems like everybody would have been talking about it, even King Herod and the rulers in Jerusalem. But instead, they seem a little surprised, you know, and the Magi show up and say, oh, we've seen a star in their east. They're like, oh, really? What star? Okay, it doesn't say that quite in Scripture, but that's kind of the implication that this is news to them.
Stargazing has always been a global sort of preoccupation. So clearly, apart from the wise men, there would have been other stargazers in that day and age who would likely have noted an anomalous bright light. For instance, observers far from Bethlehem, far from Jerusalem, far from the Middle East altogether.
The ancient Chinese kept records of supernova explosions and where they were happening in the sky. These extremely bright stars that appeared for a few weeks at a time. And there's no record of a supernova around that time, and they would have seen it from where they were. So that puts the scholarly speculation more in the direction of it being a planet that isn't particularly bright, somewhat bright, but doing some special motions in the sky.
Well, Deb, there's something kind of funny that I should have known this. I'm not an astronomer, but the line from Scripture says, we have seen his star in the east. And you have made a point of trying to help people like me remember, which I should remember on my own, that stars don't stay in the east. They're on the move all night long, going from east to west, which I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that.
It's fine. In our modern culture, we are not outside all night. We don't have that sense of the stars rising and setting each night, just like the sun does. And it's, of course, due to the rotation of the Earth. So, yes, when they see a star in the east, or when they say the star stood over Bethlehem, over where the child was, every astronomer who reads that goes like, what does it mean for a star to stand still? That makes no sense. It's not a star if it's standing still. What in the world? And that's why I used to just think it was a miracle. Now, what's interesting is in Matthew, if you look at the Greek phrases for in the east and for the star standing still, those Greek phrases are actually scientific technical terms for particular motions that planets make in the sky. And that was so interesting for me to find out. I think a lot of, the biblical translators, they didn't know some of this, but when you take the astronomical knowledge and put that into the interpretation, you discover they're talking about a certain kind of motions that we see planets making all the time, which is they will be traveling with respect to the stars in one direction, and then they'll turn around for a bit and travel back the other direction, and then turn around and go forward. And that's all due to just the relative positions of the Earth and all the other planets as they go around the sun.
Wise men being wise, they would have been familiar with the movements of a planet like Jupiter. But what's more, they would also have likely thought to check their astronomical knowledge against their historical and cultural narratives as well.
When Jupiter, doing one of these motions, was in a certain constellation that had significance for the nation of Israel, and they interpreted as meaning that a king is born.
So what I hear you saying is that from the text, even though we read it one way as lay folk, that somebody who's maybe acquainted with that terminology in Greek, they can see, oh, maybe there actually was some astronomical significance to those descriptions.
Yeah, that's what's so fascinating. And none of that changes the main point of the text. So people might be thinking, well, I'm not an astronomer. How am I supposed to know that? It's fine. You aren't supposed to know it. The main point that the Gospel of Matthew is making is that the birth of Jesus Christ has this larger significance. It has a significance in the heavens. It has a significance to all of the nations. Leaders are coming from far away to acknowledge the birth of this child. It's foreshadowing all that Christ will be, Lord of heaven and earth, and Lord of the nations. That is the message that we're supposed to draw from it.
I like to think of creation as being a message to us, has something to say to us. And if stars are part of that creation, a star can say something. There's even a famous Robert Frost poem where he's talking about a star. Choose something like a star is the title. He says, the stars say something, something. But that could be the oceans. It could be the fowl of the air, the fish of the sea. It could be anything. Do you ever think in those terms?
Oh, well, immediately Psalm 19 comes to mind. The heavens are declaring the glory of God. And then it says, there's no speech or language where their voice is not heard. They have no words, and yet we are hearing some message from them. What I hear them saying and what most of humanity hears is that there is something to this creation. There's a sense that it's more than just the physical objects in it. There's an intelligence behind it. There's a beauty behind it. And what we learn from Scripture is where that's all coming from. The heavens are declaring the glory of God, not just their own glory, like, wow, we're shiny and beautiful. We're declaring the glory of the one who made them. And that's what's so amazing is when you walk out as a believer and you look up at the night sky, you are seeing the handiwork of the same person that you pray to as the same creator. It's the creator who knows us and loves us, who longs to be known by us. And it's the same one who made that beautiful star-spangled sky.
We have these moments in the calendar when we stop to observe something special. It could be Easter. It could be Christmas. And we all have an inner child, and I also happen to have an inner preacher. And when I want to preach about something like the Star of Bethlehem, I think it's kind of interesting that we trot that star out at Christmas time and tend to then put it away for the year. We put it back in the box after we take it down from the Christmas tree, you know. Are you the kind of person who can keep that Star of Bethlehem going through the year?
You know what I found really inspiring? A couple of years ago, my pastor preached on the Bethlehem Star. You mentioned preaching. And the message that stuck with me was the contrast between the Magi and the religious leaders in Jerusalem in that story. You have the religious leaders, they had all the prophecies. They knew everything about the Jewish tradition. They knew that the Christ child was to be born in Bethlehem. They didn't notice the thing in the heavens, but the Magi did. And the Magi could have just been sitting there having scholarly debates about it. They were scholars. I know scholars and academics. We sit and we have lots of debates about things. But amazingly, they packed their bags and they got going on this long, uncertain journey to Jerusalem, still asking questions, where is the Christ child to be born? Where is this king of the Jews? And then Herod is all like just totally worried about arrival, totally missing the cosmic significance, the theological significance. He's just seeing political significance. Here's arrival. And instead, it's these foreign astronomers who come and they bring their treasures and they come to worship. They're not threatened. They come to worship the Christ child and they come to bring all of their gifts for him. And I want to be more like the Magi. And it's amazing how often I catch myself being not, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I want to take the time to pray this morning or open up the Bible. Like, good grief. The Magi rode hundreds of miles just to worship this child.
Has there ever been a time when your scientific learning and knowledge have challenged your religious faith, your beliefs?
I grew up in a wonderful Christian family, and so I've loved the scriptures all my life. And when I was in graduate school, this was in the 90s, yes, I'm getting older, Carl Sagan was big. Do you remember his TV show? And he would talk about, you know, there's this is all there is and all there ever will be. And it got to be this thing in our culture that this incredibly vast universe somehow made us insignificant or somehow ruled out God. And here I am as a Christian graduate student studying astronomy and sort of thinking, boy, yeah, that's kind of a problem, isn't it? And then I kicked myself. I'm like, hey, wait a second. No, the scriptures are so clear that God created everything, no matter how vast and huge it is. And in fact, there's these passages that talk about, you know, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways. God is pointing to the vastness of the heavens and saying, that is saying something about who I am. So as I read scripture as an astronomer, I'm carrying with me in my head this picture of the vast universe that God created. And so when I get to those passages that refer to God making the heavens, it just brings up this whole picture of the immensity of God and the incredible beauty and power of God. And that's something I love to share with other people so that other people can see that too.
Deborah Harsma served for over 12 years as the president of BioLogos. She's an astrophysicist and a frequent speaker on topics related to science and Christian faith. Thanks to you for journeying along with us day by day during this Advent season. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, you can find them all at byuradio.org or on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today's episode was produced by Tenery Taylor with help from Elaine Scott and sound design by James Call. Tomorrow, we'll travel back in time to Nazareth and ponder the improbability of Mary ever becoming so famous. I'm Marcus Smith. Constant Wonder is a production of BYU Radio.